So this morning, we're going to delve a bit more into the contemplation on the 32 parts of the body, aspect of body contemplation. Did a little bit of introduction with it the last session. Just a few comments before we move into the slideshow. Again, just to reemphasize the different ways that you can use the 32 parts contemplation. Three come to my mind specifically. Maybe there's other ways of thinking about it too that I'm not so sure of. But one is to attenuate the sense of sensual craving, as part of the path of renunciate practice. Also, just a general tool for concentration, stilling the mind, cooling the mind, oftentimes through recitation of the parts as a sequential kind of repetitive recitation of a wholesome contemplation. And also for the development of insight into the impermanent and also the not-self nature of the physical body. So I was thinking that probably, I suspect we won't get through more than one showing of the slides. There's 32 of them, of course. So maybe to do it today, sort of one or two aspects in mind of those three possibilities, and then do it again tomorrow on another round of it, maybe with just considering picking it up with a different emphasis. So, you know, we don't have the ability, much in the United States anyway, to observe autopsies, contemplation of bodies, as it really occurs. Everything is pretty well protected and sanitized from our experience here. In Thailand, there is sometimes the opportunity for monastics to go to autopsies, and the whole experience of seeing it in real life is much more powerful than looking at pictures or viewing slides or looking at movies. But it's the best we've got here at this time anyway, in terms of the human body anyway. And so that's what we use. And it's interestingly enough, even having gone through nursing school, I've never actually seen an autopsy and didn't get that opportunity when I was in Thailand myself. So next time I go to Thailand, I'm putting that on my agenda. But have seen surgery and other kinds of things. And you can really just, you know, the difference is stark in terms of looking at pictures versus the real thing. But you can sort of extrapolate sometimes if you see a dead animal, then, you know, you have some idea of what the internal structures are like and can extrapolate that to the human body as well. So just to keep in mind as we're looking, these slides are actually fairly graphic in some ways. It's very hard to find good pictures, accurate pictures on the internet. Ajanyatiko and I did a pretty exhaustive survey a few years ago. Maybe there's more now. I haven't updated it. But in ways that are realistic, but also not just singular. A lot of images are the organ itself pulled out of the context of the body, and some of those are still in the slideshow. It was really hard to find a whole lot of pictures of body parts in situ, inside the whole body. But I did find, we did find some, so included those wherever we could. Yeah, there's also the series of movies done by the guy who did the Body Worlds exhibition on autopsy, and we looked at a few of those a few years ago, and they're not bad, but again, it's dissecting oftentimes some of the plastinated models and the whole plastination process kind of takes a bit of the reality out of it too. So, and that's also still a movie, not the real thing. But this is what we've got again, so take it for what it's worth. And it's basically just trying to establish a series of images. The body contemplation, people do it in different ways. I myself use a combination of visual imagery, visual memory around the 32 parts, as well as tactile sensation wherever that's possible. For some of the 32 parts, it is possible. Others, it's pretty subtle. So visual imagery is usually a part of the actual contemplation. So that's why we have the photographs to use to instill a picture in our minds that we can bring up. Just to, you know, some people can get a bit squeamish with some of these things, and just to watch that process. And remember that this is not for the purpose of developing aversion or disgust. So if it does come up in your mind, watch that happening and maybe notice it and use it at some point for grounds for contemplation. You know, why would it cause this sense of aversion by looking at these things? It's meant to just bring a sense of reality to that which we usually filter out, that which we usually ignore, by attending to the things that we want to attend to, by seeing things in the way that we want to, and avoiding the aspects of experience, and particularly of the human body, that we find unappealing, that's not that doesn't stimulate a sense of pleasure. So use it for that purpose, just as a sense of it's a reality check. To see what the human body is actually really like. In that way, I feel, at least in my practice, it becomes something that's just a whole lot more neutral and a lot less exaggerated in one's mind. It becomes more like it is just what it is rather than what we impute onto it. So also one other thing to keep in mind with body contemplation is most teachers who teach it suggest that you use it once you've established the images in your mind and are working through the recitation. People memorize the sometimes the Pali and the English, sometimes just the English, but it's useful to memorize it so that you don't have to read every time you're contemplating it. To use it as first and foremost an internal contemplation, i.e. Concentrating on these 32 parts of your own body. The refrain from the Satipatthana, there's the internal and external, sometimes interpreted, I think mostly interpreted as one's own body versus the bodies of others. And to begin to get a very strong basis of this particular practice within oneself first, if you immediately go to external bodies before it's fully developed and established inside oneself, then sometimes it can actually stimulate sensual desire rather than help to cool it. So to be circumspect with using it as a contemplation of one's own body, especially in the beginning. So without further ado, we'll go into the slideshow. I'm just going to go through them one by one with sometimes a little bit of commentary. Sometimes it's pretty self-explanatory. So here we are. We did the reflection this morning, the introduction of this which is my body, from the soles of the feet up and down from the crown of the head, it is a sealed bag of skin filled with unattractive things. And remembering as we go through each of the 32 parts, then we also, not only are we separating one from another, but then we also bring it back together in our contemplation to the body as a whole. And seeing it all as a component, a collection of different things. So here we have hair of the head. And notice on the right the magnified view that shows the hair shafts coming up out of probably the scalp, and basically all the stuff that it's coming out of is just the surface skin, and little bits of skin and dandruff clinging to the root of the hairs. So get a firm picture of that in your mind. Hair of the head. Hair of the body. Nails. Fingernails and toenails. You can see on the fingernails on the left, one of them looks like it has a fungal infection. Teeth. Skin. So these first four, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, are generally referred to as the external parts of the body that are brought up for contemplation. In the novice ordination, these are given as objects of meditation in the forward and the reverse order. So they're seen as useful tools for contemplation right from the very beginning. Just a side note, the Visuddhimagga goes into incredible complex detail about how to do this particular contemplation with recitation and groups and in forward and reverse order for all the body parts. In my practice, it seems a bit more than, you know, a bit more of an exercise than I'm interested in doing, but it's there in full detail if you wish to examine. Skin. Flesh. So obviously a wound of some sort on this person, and the skin peeled back and layers of tissue, flesh exposed. As we go along, just remembering, there's a visual image up there, but this is actually what it's like on the inside of my body. Bring the image into your own experience of your own body. Sinews, tendons, ligaments, those bits of tissue that connect bone to bone and bone to muscle. If you open your hand, close your hand, open your hand, close your hand, there's a lot of activity of tendons and ligaments, or sinews as a combination, to do that. bones. I couldn't find an image of any of the bones very easily anyway within the body, so we're left with some images of the whole skeleton and then of the skeleton in various parts coming apart over after a long period of time. Just to remember too that, like, oftentimes the images of the skeletons we see in her is like a whole unit, like that one on the left. But you know, there's some parts of it that are units, but most of the parts are actually quite disconnected. And what's holding them together, what's holding those bones together, are the sinews within the body itself. So the bones are very much integrated in with the rest of the body tissues. The skeleton contemplation is one that often takes on some individual significance in terms of a visualization of just going from the top of the skull down to the toes in a sequential visualizing process and back up again. And it's one that one can do in all positions, all body postures, is bringing up, recollecting and maintaining that image of this body, this very body of ours, but just as a skeleton. Really look from the skull down through the rib cage, the shoulder blade and collarbone on top of it, the two long bones on top, the humerus on either side, the shorter arm bones, the ulna, the radius, coming down to the wrist and bones of the hand. I've seen the structure of the pelvis, the tailbone coming down below the level of the pelvis, where the ball and socket joint of the hip bones fit together, where they join, and then the long femur, the knee, the little patella, the kneecap on top of the knee joint, the two lower leg bones, the tibia and the fibula, down to the ankles, bones of the feet and the toes. And you can feel that, you can feel parts of that in your own body as you go through as well. Bone marrow, the interior of particularly the long bones, the large bones, where blood cells are manufactured, blood components. Kidneys, two of them, the left-hand photo showing the two kidneys in place there, more towards the middle part of the abdomen, but towards the back also, you know, more accessible from the back rather than the front. Processor of production of urine, help eliminate waste from the body. Blood circulates through the kidneys. Kidneys filter out the waste products and water, and then sent down to the bladder and excreted. And the heart, I couldn't find a good one of the heart in place, so here we have it removed from the body. The different blood vessels on the outside of the heart that feed the heart tissue itself, The heart not only pumps blood, but it also has to have a supply of its own for life to continue. Constantly beating all the time, 60 to 100 times a minute for your entire life. When the blood vessels of the heart get obstructed through plaque, that's when what happens is called the heart attack or myocardial infarction, causes some death of heart bits of heart tissue. You can see the big on the right, the big vessel coming out of the heart. At the very top of it, that's the aorta, the beginning of the aorta. And three vessels coming off the top of the aorta going to various parts of the body. This is the liver in place of the body. Big part of the metabolic system, processing of nutrients, producer of bile, filtering waste. Storage of energy. Yes, it does have two lobes, I think, at least. I don't believe that there is. You can actually have a huge amount of your liver destroyed through disease and still maintain normal functioning. I can't remember if it's even up to 90% or something like that, and still be able to function. But when it's completely shot, then, you know, a person will die slowly, unless they get a liver transplant, which is happening these days. Okay, this is what we call chylomicon, or membranes. Talking about that the other day, the a lot of this connective tissue surrounding within the abdominal cavity, holding things together in some ways. Membranes. Pyakong spleen. The one on the left is probably a little bit more true to what a normal spleen looks like. I'm pretty sure that the one on the right is enlarged through some sort of disease process. I think that to me looks like it's a bit bigger than it, quite a bit bigger than it would normally be. Pretty nondescript kind of an organ. It does have a function in terms of it. Its main function is a storage place for certain blood components, so that at times of stress, there's a reservoir of extra kinds of blood components that it can push into the system. But it's not an essential part of living, and people do have them removed in some kinds of blood disorders. Removal of the spleen for like disease called thrombocytopenia, and also some forms of leukemia kinds of situations. The spleen might become enlarged and it's just taken out, and people will still survive.
Malaria.
Yeah, because it's a blood disease, malaria. Yeah. Oftentimes,
your spleen pumps swollen.
Yeah, makes sense.
Where exactly is it located in the body in relation to other?
Sort of like in the left middle part of the abdomen. Yeah. So if you feel your stomach, it would be to the left of that, opposite from the liver. lungs. Again, I couldn't find a good one. In situ. Spongy material protected by the rib cage. Actually filled a lot with air. So you have the main stem bronchus coming down, dividing into two bronchial tubes that then continuously, just like a tree branch, divide further and further and further into smaller and smaller tubes, small bronchioles, all the way down to the very, very, very small alveoli, which are the sacs of air where there joins with the tissues, so and the circulatory system. So the air moves in, finally makes its way down to the little sacs called alveoli, and intersect with the capillaries in the blood system, so the exchange of oxygen going into the body from the lungs and exchange of carbon dioxide coming out from the circulatory system as waste back into the lungs, so that we breathe in oxygen, or a higher concentration of oxygen anyway, and then body takes that up and expels the carbon dioxide as we exhale. There's three lobes to the left lung and three lobes to the right lung, yeah, and two lobes to the left lung, if I got that right.
Lung transplants?
Yeah, they do. Not very common. Yeah. Okay. Lungs, and then this is bowels, large bowel. The one on the right isn't such a great, I mean, that looks almost a little bit more like small intestine. You can see better really on the left, the large intestine. It's just a bit out of context of the rest of the body. A lot of basically, at the large intestine comes after the small intestine. It's the end of the line, it serves the function of absorbing large amounts of water back into the system. See the appendix there at the very end, kind of on the right of that loop, that end loop. Entrails, small intestines. A lot of food processing, digestion goes on within the small intestine as it passes through. Very much interwoven with the circulatory system, so that nutrients, as they are digested, nutrients are absorbed into the bloodstream to be taken to the tissues.
We had two very different colors as well.
Yeah, I don't know the color issue.
How long is an average small?
You know, I want to say something like 14 or 17 feet, but I'm not quite sure if that's right or not. It's a lot.
How long the average time for food to make its way through the digestive tract is?
I think it probably really varies from person to person. I have to say, in my own experience, about 24 hours. You have to examine what it is that you eat one day and see when it comes out the next day. Sometimes very fast if there's a lot of activity going on. Sometimes a lot slower if there's not. Was you have a question back?
No. Mm-hmm. Is it the yellow? Is that fat?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We get a lot of visions of fat as we go through here. Contents of the stomach. pretty darn good picture. Bean sprouts. Bean sprouts. That's what it looks like to me. And excrement, I was able to find this one in situ, just that split part over sort of towards the right of the gut, showing some excrement.
And so is that located inside the bowel?
You know, it's kind of hard to tell from this photo. I mean, the size of the bowel or entrail that it's situated in looks actually pretty small. It looks more like a small intestine. You can see the large intestine up there on the left. That's definitely a large intestine thing. But the excrement itself is pretty well formed, and in the small bowel, the intestine is usually much more liquid than that. So kind of leads me to believe that it might be a section of the large bowel, but just mostly hidden. Okay, we're moving on to bile. It's hard to find a good thing of bile, but as far as we could tell when we were putting this together, we think that that's a gallbladder opened up. So you get an idea of the bile within the gallbladder. But a lot of these photos... It is green. Yeah. I had to ask Ajahn Yataka if it was green. I had to ask Ajahn Yataka when we were putting it together, is that green? Just to make sure it was bile. Just make sure we were looking at the right thing. So we've now moved from the solid parts of the body, the earth element, in relation to the body, and we're moving into the liquid element in this last half of the 32 parts. Bile. Bile is mostly produced in the liver, stored in the gallbladder, and used for fat digestion. Diseases can be like gallstones, bile stones that form inside the gallbladder and then get stuck on their way out into the intestine. That causes a lot of pain. You can live without a gallbladder as well. You just have to be a little bit more careful about how you eat fats. But the bile is still produced in the liver and secreted into the intestines. It's just there's no storage place for it without the gallbladder.
Is that the outside or cross-section?
That's it split and opened up. I think there are a few people here who might know what that is. Phlegm. Particularly over the computer keyboard. Right, in situ. Yeah, it's produced by the lungs, of course. It's normal. We all have mucus being produced in the lungs as lining the lungs and the tubes, lubrication. But then obviously it can get infected and get into overproduction and obstruct the breathing process when it gets to be too much.
It's by design, it's a process of expelling, isn't it?
Well, if an anthropologist would probably view it that way, yeah, as a way of getting rid of mucus, of bacteria or viruses. It's part of the inflammatory process, yeah, production of the mucus. Pus is... often, again, also as the result of an infection inflammatory process, and it's a combination of bacteria and white blood cells that have come in to try and counter or try and fight the bacterial infection. And as they die, they just accumulate and can drain off. If this obviously was a wound or an incision that was opened up and then the pus drained out. Blood.
Is it my understanding that blood is only the color red when it's outside the body and then it's blue?
Well, when it's oxygenated, yeah. So, I mean, it's not quite that bright probably inside the body, but in the arterial system after it's been oxygenated by the lungs and then it's going out to the tissues, it's a bit more red than it is on the return in the venous system where it's lost some of the oxygen. Sweat. One of the ways the body tries to cool itself when it's hot. Air moving over sweat helps to cool the skin. Fat. Considered a liquid in this situation. It's kind of a semi-solid, semi-liquid, and it's easy to divert one's eyes to the bowels at that point, but the reason I got this one is because where the skin is split at the top left part of the picture, you can see a very clear layer of fat below the skin. Fat is where excessive nutrient, excessive carbohydrates are converted into fat and stored anthropologically again as for times of stress when the body needs energy and doesn't have food. The fat will be broken down. Tears. Lubricating the eye. Grease.
Let's go back to tears. Do we know if there's an actual biological function for tears, like when you're...
The tears themselves, you know, bathe the eye and lubricate the eye so that you can move it back and forth and so that they you don't destroy the very delicate tissues on the front of the eye. So they're needed for that, you know, the whole process of emotion and crying things. I don't know if there's a reason for that biologically.
Because crying, there's a whole, like, biological response, like your nose starts running.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't know the speculations around that.
There's a duct from your eye to your nose, to your hole. So probably is a lot of time.
Yeah.
Grease. Spittle. I don't know if Jane Jira can hear me in the kitchen, if she's in the kitchen, but I remember one year when we showed this, she said, "Oh, it's so cute." I thought, well, we have different perceptions here.
Can you have it during meditation?
Maybe so. Here's another cute baby picture. So, obviously. Mucus, Singanika. Seen a lot of that around these past few weeks.
And how is that related to phlegm?
Phlegm is from the lungs, yeah, specifically, yeah. Sputum, phlegm, from the lungs. And then, yeah, I guess one could say it is also a form of mucus too. Oil of the joints, inside the joint capsules is synovial fluid, which helps to also lubricate the joints. Urine inside the bladder. And lastly, brain. In situ. Yeah, you can see that, yeah, the skull on the table off to the left. And the there's a lining that covers the brain, which you can see he's peeled back and is holding with the forceps.
Pericardium?
That's the heart, that's the lining of the heart, pericardium. This is the, what's it called? There's another word that I'm trying to think of too, but meninges are the part of that top layer. Okay, that's the 32 parts of the body. Don't know if there's any last, I mean, it's 9 o'clock already, so we've kind of gone over a bit. I just don't know if there's any final questions or clarifications or how to use it in the next day or so before we break.
So what I've kind of started doing is when I go through the list, I kind of separate the object from my own body and then envision my body with that absent as well as it kind of in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually kind of dissect it. Even when I get rid of the bones, everything is just in the heat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a great way to do it. I think that's the way Ajahn Chah practiced it himself and taught, is to take one piece at a time, put it out in front of you. I don't know if he taught to then put it all back together or not. But yeah, that's a very good way of doing it. It's kind of decomposing this sense of self around it, which we're going to talk a little bit more about tomorrow. But again, just using this as a contemplation. And, you know, it's a really good one to, you know, if all of a sudden the mind seems for some reason to be overwhelmed with some sort of sensual craving, to just pull this out, start reciting the 32 parts, visualizing, and it's amazing how quickly the fever cools. And then just even without that, using it just as a contemplative exercise for helping to still and settle the mind. I find it's actually very useful when I'm drowsy. So like oftentimes first thing in the morning, 5 o'clock morning puja sit, I'll just go through at least the 32 parts until I get a bit more energy and wake up a bit. It's an act of contemplation that helps from just drifting off. Okay, we'll call it a day then.